It began with the fall of the Western Roman Empire and merged into the Renaissance and Age of Discovery. It was a time of kings and queens, lords and ladies, farmers, villagers, and peasants. There were explorers, crusades, wars, and defense of the homelands, battles between family and between kingdoms, all throughout Europe and Scandinavia. Welcome to Medieval Me, the podcast for historians and enthusiasts of medieval history. And now here's your host, Wendy Jordan.
Okay, welcome to I'd call this our first real episode of Medieval Me. We had the introductory episode where I introduced myself and you got to know a little bit about my credentials and how I got into this period, but this is the first one where we're actually going to talk about an actual topic and subject matter. I'm here with my co-host. You want to say something?
Sure. I'm Randy Gibson, and I am with RDG Communications, the sponsor of Medieval Me.
Okay. We kind of tossed around ideas on how we wanted to present this, whether it was just going to be me talking, well, essentially to myself, but to the microphone and thus everyone listening. But then I kind of felt like, no, that felt too much like a classroom, and I wanted this to feel like a conversation between friends. So I brought in someone who I'm very close to, but someone who is not a purveyor of the subject like I am. And so I kind of want you to be the audience surrogate. I'm going to kind of talk to you a little bit, ask you questions, kind of things that most people would think or most people would know, and just kind of let a friendly, casual conversation stem with there.
Yeah, and I appreciate being brought in, because I love history. I've actually got my minor in history, but mine is more American and not really the European or the medieval time period. So there's a lot of misconceptions that I'm sure that I've had and many of our listeners would have. So it's going to be really fun to visit about this.
Okay. And, this might change in the future. We might have different people. There might be episodes where it's a solo gig. We're really just trying to, get our feelers out there and see what's going on. But this kind of felt like a way to keep me from getting too technical in terminology, kind of keep it going with, someone who is interested but not degreed in the subject necessarily.
Absolutely. And I think our listeners are going to really enjoy about this because like we kind of talked about, Wendy, in our first episode where we introduced you, you kind of talked about a lot of the movies or the stories that we've heard and how some of them are based on truth, loosely truth, but some of them are very styled, very Hollywood.
Yes.
And, so it's going to be fun to really learn what the truth was like.
I know. I'm really, really kind of looking forward to some of that. I'm really looking forward to movies and media. But for this first one, I decided to just go completely back to the basics. I wanted to, where do you start? You start at the beginning. And I wanted to discuss what the medieval period really is and just kind of get going with that. So my first question is going to be, when I say the medieval period, what time frame do you think I'm talking about? Well, give me like generic dates that you would think of.
For me, whenever you say medieval period, I think Dark Ages.
Okay.
I think probably around the years 1100, 1200, 1300, 1400, maybe early 1500s. I think castles.
Okay.
I think kingdoms. I think knights. And I think the mystical dragons.
Ooh, dragons. Oh, well, unfortunately, no dragons. But would it surprise you if I told you that generally speaking, the medieval period actually started in the 5th century?
That's very surprising, yes.
Okay.
I would not have thought that.
I can go ahead and start there, but the medieval period roughly spans about 1,000 years. It's a lot longer than most people think because they do kind of automatically assume 1100, 1200 is when it started. Now, I will, throw a disclaimer out here that it's really hard to give exact dates for the start and end of an era because think about it, things happen in ripples. It's a ripple effect. Life and earth-shattering events can happen in one day, but it takes time for the implications of that to really seep out. So depending on the person you're talking to, the specific historian, where they specialize, what field they specialize in, they might give you slightly varying dates. But the general consensus being from about the 5th century, so 400, 500 to 1500 is the date that's generally given. If I'm forced to give an actual date, I don't like to do that because I know that things happen over time. But if someone said to me, pick a date for the start and end of the medieval period, I would always start in the year 410. That is the year that the city of Rome was sacked by a Visigothic group of people led by Alaric. The Visigoths were a Germanic tribe from north, and they started coming in about that time. And 410 was this monumental year because Rome was sacked. And to a lot of people, that signifies the end of the Roman Empire, thus the end of antiquity and the beginning of the medieval period.
That's really interesting to me, because I would have never in my wildest dreams thought that it started that early. Right. You know, and whenever I think the fall of Rome, I really don't think that as being the beginning of the medieval period.
Right. And I have to also add a disclaimer to that as well, because this can get complicated again, depending on who you're talking about. But Rome had been split into two empires at this point. So it was the fall of the Western Roman Empire, but the Eastern Empire still existed. It had just been changed to be called the Byzantine Empire. So when I say that, and a lot, like I said, a lot of people might give different start dates. That's just always the one I turn to, because it is that monumental event that kind of shows the end of one period, the antiquity period of Rome and Greece and things like that, and the beginning of another one. Now, when I'm asked to give a date for the end of the medieval period, I tend to say the Battle of Bosworth, which was in 1485 in England. But that's because my focus has always been in England and Scandinavia. So I kind of stem toward looking at an English date or a Scandinavian date to make that claim. But a lot of people will use different dates. A lot of people use 1492 to talk about the end of the medieval period, Columbus, Age of Discovery, New World, End of an Era. So a lot of people will use 1492 instead. I just happen to go with 1485.
Well, that's really interesting, 1492. I really didn't think of Columbus being the end of the medieval period. I figured Columbus came way after the medieval period ended, even though he was in the 1400s. I don't know. I just never really put the two and two together. It's just really fascinating.
And a big reason for that is because the medieval period is actually, it can be separated itself into three distinct sections. There is the early Middle Ages. There's the high Middle Ages medieval period. And then there's the late medieval period. I'm kind of throwing words around Middle Ages, medieval period. They're the same thing. And then you also mentioned the Dark Ages, which is a really fascinating thing. One of my favorite professors at the University of Oklahoma, where I went an undergrad, who was a medievalist, a specialist in the medieval period, she always said she came ready to fight when anyone called it the Dark Ages. That's how she said it. She said, I'm here with my dukes up, because this period wasn't the Dark Ages. She felt like the term implied that it was static, that it was a period of not changing, not moving, not progression. And I'm sure that that's kind of the implication you get from high school, undergrad, college, is that, oh, well, we had Rome, and then we had all of this technology, and then we lost it. And the Dark Ages, nothing was happening, no progression, nobody did anything. And then the Renaissance was the rebirth of all the knowledge and learning. And that this professor and me, after I studied it, think that the Dark Ages implies nothing's going on.
That's really interesting, because I guess whenever I talk about the Dark Ages, I think more on the religious context more than the cultural context.
Okay. And I mean, that's obvious, because religion was so core to the cultural context that's going on. And I also want to be clear, I'm coming from a Western civ type of perspective, England, Scandinavia, things like that. When you get into what's going on in Asia, and then of course in the New World, America, the New World that Europeans hadn't really even noticed yet, it's completely different when you talk about their medieval period, quote unquote. But as far as the West goes, I feel like that's the implication given, is that the Dark Ages weren't being there. It wasn't the era of progression. People were the same at the start of the medieval period or the Dark Ages that they were at the end of it. I don't know if that is an accurate stereotype that most people would think of.
Interesting. Yeah, I always kind of thought, I kind of think of it as a time the Romans were so innovative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had all of these inventions and ways they did things. And then whenever I think medieval time period, I think none of that existed anymore and nobody built those things anymore.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, things were different. Technology definitely changed, but technology also progressed. Battle tactics changed. Improvements came in forms of things like improvements came everywhere. So there was still progression going on. Whenever I think about the Middle Ages, and like I said, it's in three distinct periods, the early, the high, and the late. Really, the high Middle Ages was almost like a little Renaissance in and of itself. So you got the early Middle Ages, and that's kind of signified by the end of places like classic Rome and Greece. You get a lot of movement, a lot of migration of other groups, like Germanic groups that come in. And so it kind of was a time of population change. It was a time of regression a little bit. I hate using the word regression, but a change from the antiquity. And then the high Middle Ages, whenever you say, like, you know, chivalrous knights and dueling nobles and fair maidens and castles, that stereotype is the high Middle Ages. The high Middle Ages was significant, signified, I don't know, for a climate change event known as the medieval warm period. And at this point, the weather and climate improved so much that there was a big growth economically, growth agriculturally, population. It did a lot better. There was a lot of movement, and it was actually a good period. It was almost like a little resurgence.
So would you say that was more like the 13, 1400s or more like the 11, 1200s?
Oh, I'm forgetting the exact dates, but it is toward the middle. It is something probably, I can't remember off the top of my head the exact dates, but it is somewhere in the neighborhood of 12, 1300s, and then it lasts for a few hundred years. 1100s, 1200s. The late Middle Ages, that is, again, where you see a little bit of a decrease again. Climate change, again, kind of brought about lots of famine. And you had the Black Plague, obviously. So there was lots of war. So there was a huge toll taken on the population of Europe at that time. And the end of it, coming out of the medieval period and kind of going into the Renaissance, that was kind of stemmed by the resurgence and the rebirth and the growth that it took to reinstitute the Western world kind of after the Black Plague and after so many wars. And that was a period of a couple hundred years brought it out of it.
So the Black Plague, did that happen in the medieval time period?
Yes, it did. It did. It was in the 1300s. You know, the first one is the outbreak that everyone really hears about, but the Black Plague wasn't a one-off incident. There was the big one that got most people, but plague turns up all the time. It would make sporadic resurgences, and even now there was a rat that tested positive for it in Colorado a couple months ago, but penicillin cures the Black Plague, so you're fine now.
Well, it is 2020. Anything can happen this year for sure.
Yeah, there was.
I'm sure the Black Plague could come back.
I rolled my eyes so hard when I read that article because it just sounded like rats got the Black Plague, and I was like, yes, but penicillin can cure that now. So just go get your shot of penicillin and you're fine.
Well, that's really interesting, Wendy. You know, I always think, when I think medieval time, I think, like I mentioned, knights. You mentioned a little bit about the Black Plague, which was very interesting. But, I mean, is this the time of, like, Joan of Arc?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Joan of Arc was in, yeah. Yes.
So she was medieval time period.
Yes, she was. Most of what I really specialize in is medieval period. And that does span. Whenever I talk about Vikings, that was an occurrence from the Viking Age. Kind of, it's its own weird little thing, but it is generally within the medieval time frame. The medieval period in Scandinavia is seen a little bit differently than the medieval period of the rest of continental Europe, but generally speaking, it's roughly the same thing in the same era. So from that all the way up to, like I said, Battle of Bosworth is where I tend to end it, but that's 1485. So we've got 1,000 years worth of stories and 1,000 years worth of culture and history to talk about.
That's really interesting. I mean, just 1,000 years from the 400s to the 1400s, it's really 1,000 years. And you kind of, when you look back in history, I'm sure in your field, there's so much detail, but when you're just kind of a casual learner, it just seems like, oh yeah, 400s, 500s, 1100s. It's just that period of kings and castles and knights and mm-hmm. battles and crusades, and that's about it.
Oh yeah, the crusades is going to be a fun one. I'm looking forward to that because there were so many crusades.
So it wasn't just the British headed over to the Middle East.
Oh no, and we'll have to say when we get there. I mean, little teaser: there was a children's crusade. I don't know if you know that.
A children's crusade?
Yeah,
really?
little tester where children were the only ones.
So did they ride little horses with little shields, and did they ride across the fields?
It was not great. Like I said, we'll definitely talk about that. I have episodes for the crusades, but there's your little teaser. So nice. Again, there's just even things you think you know. Oh, people know the crusades; they hear about that, they know that. But then it's like, well, did you know there's a children's crusade? So like I said, thousand years worth of stories, just all right there to go. I guess right now would be a good time to take a quick little break, and then we'll continue with this discussion. I think I'm going to ask you a couple more things, questions about stereotypes that might be held, and just kind of discuss them. We'll be right back. And we're back from our break, trying to decide what we wanted to do for the back half of this little episode, kind of introductory. I decided I'm going to ask you, is there any questions from the audience, or audience one singular person, that you can ask maybe on behalf of everybody? Any general concepts, any general thing about the medieval period, the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages?
Okay. I know you're going to have segments about this because I've just got just different questions. And I mean,
you can even maybe just tell me what you would like to hear about specifically in the future.
Yeah, in the future, I think when people think about medieval time periods, at least for me, I think of the romanticism. Think of the stories. I think of kings and queens and the prince and the princess and, you know, the villain. I think Robin Hood and King Richard and King John.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
And I think the sword and the stone.
Yes. Okay.
And just all of those stories.
And even your just quintessential generic
even
Disney
your
everywhere.
Cinderella, yeah. Sleeping Beauty, you know, Philip and Aurora and
everything.
Charming and Snow White and,
oh, yes.
You know, the whole Disney aura. Mm-hmm. And just that whole feel of castles and pointy hats and veils and knights and horses and swords.
Okay, yes. I mean, that is very accurate. Of course, there were lots of kings, princesses, castles, knights. Knights late is the high Middle Ages kind of thing. That's when you get the real age of chivalry going on. Like I said before, most of the stereotypical thoughts of the medieval period come from the high Middle Ages. But I would also encourage people to kind of look out for peasant stories and things kind of that nature, things that don't necessarily have to do with monarchy. I get it. I love the scheming politics and all of that comes with monarchy, but there are still lots of fun things that have to do with not nobility. There are fun things that you can find just looking at the peasantry, the common people. Anything else?
Yeah. Okay. So we hear the stories, Cinderella, okay,
yeah.
You know, she was not a princess, she was a handmaiden, she was a stepchild, and then the prince fell in love with her. Could something like that have really have happened? Because it seemed like marriages mm-hmm. were foreordained mm-hmm. almost.
Correct.
Yeah, it was more like the Philip Aurora where children, babies were betrothed to each other. Could a prince have found just a peasant girl and married her and her become the queen?
A peasant girl, absolutely not. So that's not the case. One of my favorite stories in the medieval period comes from the War of the Roses in England. And while she wasn't a peasant, the king did secretly marry for love a woman who was far beneath his station. She wasn't a peasant. She wasn't a floor cleaner. She wasn't a maid. It wasn't anything that level. She still came from a wealthy family. But as far as being from the pool of selective queens, she was not in it. So that is a sort of Cinderella story, because the king did do that out of love. And it caused a lot of stuff. It caused a lot of backlash. But it is essentially as close to a Cinderella story that you could have gotten in this period.
You know, it's really interesting because you think about those stories and really within my lifetime, as I watched the British monarchy, some of the same things happened. I mean, we had David, who was Elizabeth's uncle, who basically fell in love with someone who I guess was not of royal lineage
mm-hmm.
and wound up abdicating the throne.
Correct.
And which is why we have Elizabeth today. And then we had Margaret, who was Elizabeth's younger sister,
mm-hmm.
who actually was more of the outgoing one and probably more wanted to be the queen than Elizabeth, who was more reserved,
mm-hmm.
but yet she wasn't allowed to be, but yet she was very boisterous
yes.
against that.
Yes, a couple of, I got a couple of potential pins out of that one for discussion points. One just being, you know, obviously that Elizabeth now would be queen before her younger sister Margaret, because it did go by eldest son, mostly. It was always eldest son, first of all. There's a contested queen of the medieval period. Her name was Maud or Margaret, or Mary, depending on where you were talking about, or people in the medieval period, a lot of them, they had different names depending on what language people were speaking, French, English, whatever. So she's a contested queen, but not excluding her, the first queen was Mary Tudor, Henry's daughter, and that Henry VIII's daughter, excuse me, and that is distinctly outside of the medieval period. And rules had to be changed because the rule always was eldest male. And it was, you know, around the time of King Henry, whenever he didn't have an older male, that it became apparent that it was like boys first, girls, if there aren't any boys, send it to the daughter before you send it to some random cousin. But before that, yeah, always boys and always the eldest.
So always the eldest boy. So there could have been seven older sisters and finally the eighth child was a male and he would become king and ruler.
Exactly.
It's really fascinating. I bet the older sisters didn't take too kindly to that a lot of times, did they? Just knowing sibling rivalry a little bit.
Well, and the same thing really that did kind of descend down a bit. That same thing could be said not for monarchy, but, you know, you have different people and their different ways of parting out inheritance amongst other nobility, other rich people, but even just common people, how would you part out inheritance? And most of the time it just generally did go boys first. There were some instances, depending on the era you're in, for a while they had equal parts to the boys. And then sometimes it was all to one older son, just kind of depended where you were looking and at what time period.
So another question, did the kings or did the prince who was the heir to the throne, did they often ride out on these battles and lead their troops, or did they stay back behind the walls of the castle and let their armies go do the fighting and the crusading?
As it is with people in general and different leaders today, and again, 1,000 years, you got lots of different leaders in there. Depends on the king, depends on the person. You know, like, is the tale of Robin Hood comes from, King Richard was out on crusade. He was really out there. He definitely fought in battle. There are some stories, some people claim that he was the first one off the boat. You know, obviously that people that are writing that were people on his side. So whether they're being honest or not, if he was the first one off the boat for real, but he definitely was fighting. He definitely was out there with his men. And then you had other kings who did kind of, they might've stayed back, or they might just have not really been warriors, fighters at all. Especially, it was especially hard when you had young boys on the throne. I mean, when you're getting 10-year-olds there, obviously they wouldn't be out on the battlefield. So
were there times when there were young children on the throne?
Yes. Yes. We'll get to it because it was an inkling that spawned a whole lot of things, but there was this instance, because it always has to go to the older son. There was a king, I'll get to names later, kind of leaving it a little bit secret, but there was a king who had many sons, and his older son had a son, right? It was Edward the Black Prince was the older son, heir to the throne, and Edward the Black Prince had a son named Richard. Now, Edward the Black Prince actually predeceased his father, the king, and died. But that meant the throne didn't go to Edward the Black Prince's younger brother, even though there was a slew of them. It went to his son upon the death of the king, the grandfather. It passed from grandfather through the deceased son to grandson, meaning that it was a very young boy that was on the throne, as opposed to his uncles, who would have been older because his father had already passed in an accident. So yes, there were instances of...
Were there any times when those uncles, like, I mean, I'm almost thinking Lion King, where
Scar
wanted to come and get rid of the little fur ball, and, you know, because Mufasa died and, you know, Scar became the king, even though Simba was the rightful king. Did any of that sort of thing really ever happen?
Those things happened, yes. There's, like I talked about, with Richard II, Shakespeare has a Richard II play. It's a tragedy, and it, you know, kind of talks about his rule, and I can get into it a lot more because he was so young when he got on the throne, and there, you know, it's always contentious when you have a young ruler, because lots of people, both within the nation state, kind of say, oh, well, this is my chance to start grabbing money, grabbing influence, this child, basically try and get myself as much power and accumulated wealth as I possibly can while they're young. And then it's also when other countries are like, oh, there's a child on the throne, we can go right now. So that is always a very contentious time. One of my favorite stories towards the end of the medieval period, it is essentially a Scar story, because these two, I'll get, it's one of my favorites, but the prince was young, he was like 12, and his father passed away, and he was supposed to become king, and he disappeared. He completely disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to him. And there's a big thing in history. They don't know whether the uncle, who would have assumed the throne upon the death of the boy, did the uncle kill him? Did somebody else? What happened? Nobody knows. And you have sides that really within the historical field will fight tooth and nail about who killed this prince that disappeared. And they haven't found him.
Oh, really? They never saw
him? They never found him. Never found him again. Never saw him again.
Wow.
They did find some remains. It's a story in history. It's called The Princes in the Tower, because it was him and his younger brother that they just disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to them. They did find remains in the Tower of London doing some renovation, and they've buried them, but the crown and the government haven't signed off on any DNA testing. So we don't know if it's them, but it could have been them. But I mean, this was a couple, not many years ago.
I was going to say, I think I remember reading about that in the news. So is that something where DNA tests could say that, yes, this was those princes?
I would assume that if they had a good enough sample, they could find a way to try to tie it to them. I mean, technology has evolved so much since then, but I mean, I just think of, if it is them, you know, how amazing is it technology wise, you know, that they've finally been found, you know,
400, like almost like their souls were like waiting to be found.
550-ish years later, and they're finally found.
So what about things like, another interesting story that I think would come from that time period, there's the story about the Man in the Iron Mask.
Yes. Yeah, that's toward the end of, that's getting dicey as to whether it's medieval or not, because it's kind of in that transitional era. But, I mean, the Man in the Iron Mask, as far as the Alexandre Dumas book, it's definitely a story based on a general idea, a general fantasy. You know, those ledgers, those things, what really spawned the legend of the Man of the Iron Mask came about, it kind of sort of existed, but it really spawned after the French Revolution and the storming of the Bastille. So this is a couple hundred years later that the real mythos around the legend of the Man of the Iron Mask came to be. And I'm not a French historian, so I kind of know this by proxy. I know this because I know general things, some general education courses, knowing about, you know, France's dealings in England and things, but I'm nowhere near expert on French.
Very interesting. So, of the castles, any of these old medieval castles, you lived over there in England for a while. Any of these old castles still around?
Most of them, yeah. A lot of them are still around. It's really, they're kind of everywhere. I think that they are just kind of sporadically placed everywhere. And, you know, some of them are just ruins, and some of them are just locations, and some of them, you know, are big tourist attractions. It just kind of depends on what you're looking for. There's one, I remember one day I was literally just wandering around London while I was over there, because I had a free day and I didn't really have anything to do. So I was just wandering around, and I turned a corner and I see this big, you know, ruined wall and this sign, and it just says, you know, Winchester Cathedral or Winchester Castle. And I went, okay. And I mean, it's just, I mean, you turn a corner on, you know, modern day London, and there it is.
So it's not like one of these things where you got the big parking lot like Graceland and Elvis's house or anything.
Yeah, not with that one. Some of the castles definitely, but not all of them.
Very interesting. So, you know, it's just really kind of fascinating, and you kind of think about these things. Did the kings? Okay, one thing that, like, I'd love to go to medieval times, the dinner theater where they have, you know, the jousting and all of the people and the horses, and, you know, you eat off the metal plates everything. Yeah, it's really fun.
Yes.
So, but one of the things that kind of freaked me out a little bit is the one that I went to in Dallas actually had this little tiny museum type thing, but it showed like some of the torture things from the dungeon.
That's
Were
fun.
Those real?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes. I mean,
they just look brutal.
Awful. Yeah,
I just can't even imagine.
I say I study this period, and I'd be a fly on the wall to look at it, but I would never want to live there. Like, I'd, you know, kind of just keep my head down and shuffle to the market, because I'd be terrified. Because yes, those devices were all very real.
I mean, I just can't even imagine. The nice ones were where you hung in a cage above everybody and had to watch everybody be tortured.
Those are nice, but I mean, it wasn't, but nice
compared
when they
to the one with the spikes and being tied down by your wrist and being pulled apart literally. I mean, when they say drawn and quartered, they're really meaning drawn and quartered. I mean, you're like pulled apart. I mean, it's just brutal. I don't even know how they could be so vicious to another human being.
Can I plug somebody? Should I plug somebody? I might just speak in generic terms. One of my professors at the University of Oklahoma, she's a specialist specifically in the Inquisition, but coming with the Inquisition specialty, she's written books about medieval torture because she's an expert on the Inquisition. And so she would talk about it all the time, about all these crazy torture devices and all of these things. And she's fluent in Latin and Italian, and so she would read them. And she just remembered, she would talk about it and just be like, nothing surprises me anymore. Nothing phases me because I've read about medieval torture.
I mean, I just can't help but think about, our military was getting land blasted by a lot of people in the media about the horrible torture at Gitmo. And I'm just like, compared to this, I mean, that was a cakewalk.
That gets political and I get a little squirmy when it gets there. But I just say that it wasn't nice to be tortured in the medieval period. It definitely is what we would consider cruel and unusual punishment.
I mean, you think of, people running around, the young girls with the flowers in their hair and the blacksmith men and, all of this, and you just don't think about what the poor people who were caught doing something or accused. I mean, there was no rights like we have in the United States. It was just,
It was just a period. It was just a different time. And saying like, talk about like all the torture and all of that. But I mean, there was also, lots of music and lots of art and lots of growth for countries. I mean, the Magna Carta comes smack out of the Middle Ages, and it was a time of progression. There were lots of great things happening on top of lots of not so great things happening.
I hope one of your future episodes involves music. Whenever you talk about, the medieval period, you don't really think a lot about music except for the lute. That's kind of what comes to my mind, but I have a lot of connections in the music industry and a lot of musicians and historical musicians. And I know there was a lot of beautiful music at the time period.
Oh, yeah. 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 Lots of things were written. It's just hard because, most of it at the time would have been religious music. And obviously they had no way of really recording it. Not everyone was literate. They wrote music differently than we write it now. And so, it just takes a lot for people to really get there. But that is definitely potential for a future episode. We have lots of potential topics for future episodes. We'll kind of figure it out and see where we're going on it, where we want to start. There's lots of good starting spots. It'll just be interesting to see what we come up with. But we have babbled on for a long time. So I think we'll just go ahead and say thank you for joining us. Thank you for talking with me and being my audience surrogate for everybody. And we just want to, hope that you continue to come back and join us next time. Medieval Me.